ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
36-36 tie in overtime. Chiefs first down and goal to go. Mahomes looks to throw it. Pump faking right side. He wants it. A comeback cut. It is caught by Kelce. Touchdown, Kansas City. One of the greatest duos in the history of the National Football League. Patrick Mahomes to Travis Kelce on a push fade comeback. And the Chiefs have won this incredible divisional playoff game in overtime.
That was the end of not just the greatest football game I think we have ever seen, but maybe the greatest weekend in the history of the NFL. All four playoff games decided on their final play also sent no less than Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady home early in the process. So our Monday morning quarterback, Alex Smith, is here to tell us what he saw that we didn't over this weekend. And my God, it's a lot. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, January 24th. This is ESPN Daily.
Pablo, what's up?
Yo, man.
I don't know what we're supposed to do right now to encompass what the hell we just saw. Like, how we're going to do that justice.
I don't either. My body's tingling. Dude, like that's not even a lie or an exaggeration. It still is in this weird out of body sort of experience.
I mean, that game could have just kept going and going. I think everybody would have just kept watching.
I didn't think football could be this fun. And I say that as somebody who really enjoys watching football. And I'm curious, Alex Smith, as somebody who played the position of quarterback, who allegedly played the same sport you just watched tonight. Yeah. What was it like to watch, before we get into the whole like blame assignment and how this all fell apart for Buffalo, what did it feel like for you to watch Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes? I mean, clearly at the peak of their powers, at a peak, by the way, that I don't know if many other people have ever tasted.
I don't know if there's another human being on planet Earth, and I say this with the greatest respect to you know, obviously Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers are going to win the MVP this year.
Sure.
But those guys cannot hold a candle to these two guys, to Pat and Josh, and what they can do. And I also say that I don't think the NFL has ever seen a game like this ever. And you're talking about a sport that has had the greatest athletes in this country. Certainly for the past, 60, 70, 80 years here. And I don't think we've ever seen anything like this. And I think for a couple of reasons. It wasn't that long ago, but both these guys wouldn't be allowed to play quarterback. You know, they would have been playing a different position. You know, there were archaic offenses where, you know, these guys, Josh would have been playing defensive end or something. And we've seen great athletes play quarterback before that have a lot of tools that can throw it and run it and process. And obviously, great physical talent, great brains, and be on display. But again, they really were kind of, they had these restrictions put on them by these lame offenses over the last, prototypical pro-style offenses where, Michael Vick had his fit into a box and Randall Cunningham and any of these great athletes that had multiple tools. And we've seen prolific passers in the NFL, certainly, but nothing like these two. And then on the biggest stage, lay it all on the line.
Yes.
I mean, they both put up over 400 yards of offense almost. Each of these guys just in running and throwing. They both led their teams in rushing. Josh Allen basically willing his team single-handedly. I mean, running around. I mean, it was so impressive. Escaping out of the pocket, prolonging plays, making ridiculous throws downfield. And then just to go blow for blow with Patrick in Arrowhead was absolutely electric. Again, it does beg the question. We get to overtime here. You know, it was a one possession overtime game again. And we've seen this, we saw this a couple years ago. The Chiefs fell victim to this, to the Patriots. And yeah, you're kind of left with the question, like, what? Why are these the rules? Like, it's not that hard of a change,
Yeah. We'll get to that in a bit here, Alex, because I feel like we owe it to this game to just say some of the absurd facts about it, right? So yes, both quarterbacks had at least 300 passing yards. Both quarterbacks completed at least 70% of their passes. Both quarterbacks had a 60-yard touchdown. Both quarterbacks did, in fact, lead their teams in rushing. Neither team had a turnover. It just in terms of just the perfection of offense that you would see in a football game, this had all of it. And I know we don't want to be prisoners of the moment. That's always something we want to strive to avoid. But my God, was this prison and let's live there for a second here, Alex, because let's just start with the end of the fourth quarter there with 1:54 left on the clock, because this is when Josh Allen is trailing 26-21. Kansas City is up. And I don't, do you even remember what happened to get to Buffalo 29, Kansas City 26?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it involved somebody named Gabriel Davis that I didn't really think about a ton until this 2-minute period.
Yeah, you know, he's kind of sneaky. He kind of really only been featured in the red zone a little bit with the Bills, but he's kind of obviously overlooked. They got Stephon Diggs. Josh Allen obviously carries a huge, you know, portion of the offense. So we haven't really ever talked about Gabriel Davis. And it's 4th and 13. I mean, this is the game. They need a touchdown, and Josh Allen drops back. And so he's got Stephon Diggs to his right, and he's like staring over to the right. In fact, he almost semi-shoulder pumps over to the right. And he's doing this all. He whips back to his left then and throws a laser beam into the back of the end zone.
Josh looks, pumps once, fires a strike into the end zone, man wide open, touchdown! Gabriel Davis, touchdown Buffalo! A laser from Josh Allen! A touchdown for Buffalo, and they take the lead with 1:54 to go.
And there's no one even in the picture with him. And you're like, how did this happen on 4th and 13? And it's not like the Chiefs were bringing in all-out pressure. They were literally playing coverage. And Gabriel Davis runs this post route with a little stutter step at the top, and he makes the corner fall down. I mean, he literally falls down in his back pedal, and he is wide open in the back of the end zone.
And one mixtape tour level crossover.
Yes. You know, Stephon Diggs had gotten a ton of attention the entire time, and he comes whipping back and hits Gabriel Davis for this touchdown, his third of the game, which you're thinking at this point, it's already crazy. 4th and 13, they just hit this touchdown to take the lead. And then, like, this started the cascade of events you just talked about.
I mean, Alex, this is so just to catch us up here, right? Because they get Diggs for the 2-point conversion, right?
Yes.
To bring it to 29-26. Yep. And then what happens is something that you personally are intimately familiar with, right? It's the act of throwing the ball, dumping it, relatively speaking, to Tyreek Hill, and then allowing him to make you look awesome. Yep.
Yeah, it's a good feeling, Pablo. It's really amazing. You should try it. Everybody should try it.
Mahomes over the middle. Cut Tyreek Hill up to 45. Angling right, 40, 35, Cheetah, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown! Kansas City, a 64-yard touchdown!
Honestly, it was a really great route from Tyreek, and obviously it was an amazing throw, but I got to give a lot of credit. They were playing what's called two-man. You see it a lot of times in these kind of prevet defenses, meaning there's two safeties deep, and it's man underneath. And really, all the defenders underneath that are playing man, their only responsibility is to not let their receiver inside of them. You know, they have help to the outside, to the safeties. And so their only responsibility is to make the receiver go outside and funnel them to the safety. Well, Tyreek, you know, he takes the outside release because it's there. But then at the top of this route runs same thing, a little, you know, puts a little sauce at the top of this route and gets the DB to kind of take the cheese and hits this in cut. And Patrick hits him in stride. Well, everybody else is man defender, right? Except the two safeties. Well, they had no chance of catching Tyreek in a dead sprint. The peace sign came out, which is one of my son's favorite things. And you're like, well, there it is. The game's over. Game's over.
Right. It's Kansas City 33, Buffalo 29. The clock is winding. We get to actually 1:02 left. That's so much we have at the top of this Bills drive. And we're thinking, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I agree.
Josh Allen, because like this feels implausible. It feels implausible to do what he proceeds to do to Gabriel Davis again, Alex, who becomes the first wide receiver in NFL history to have 4 receiving touchdowns in a playoff game. But how did that come together, because this happened so quickly that I actually don't fully remember what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I really thought the game was over, but Josh Allen single-handedly willed this game back. I mean, on his legs, he was running around. I mean, the D-line was so exhausted chasing him around. I mean, they had literally given up. They had thrown in like the white towel. Like, I mean, they wanted no more of this. And he hits Gabriel Davis down the pipe with 13 seconds left.
Josh takes shotgun snap, looks, steps up, has time, fires to the end zone. Are you kidding me? Unbelievable. The Bills get the lead back again.
And clearly at this point, the game is over. Mind you, again,
it has to be.
For everybody out there, this is taking place at Arrowhead. I mean, it is the loudest stadium on earth, literally on earth. And Josh, against all odds, I mean, literally did the impossible.
No, headlines are being written. Dirt is being thrown on the Chiefs' season. It is Buffalo 36, Kansas City 33. And there are 13 seconds left, Alex. At the 25-yard line is where the Kansas City Chiefs begin to march. And I feel so stupid for not, like, assuming that this was actually a thing that could happen.
Yeah, so you and me both. First off, there was a huge mistake in the sense. I don't know why the Bills didn't squib kick this kickoff.
Right.
Because at this point, there's 13 seconds left. You're literally just trying to get less seconds. Why would you give Patrick one more play? You squib kick this, 5 to 6 seconds run off. They literally have to try to throw a Hail Mary or run one of the, you know, the trick hook and ladder kind of plays. And the game's over. But they decide to kick it deep, you know. And so they get the ball at the, no time runs off the clock. There's 13 seconds at the 25. And the Chiefs run the play. And we actually ran it when I was there. I scored a touchdown on it against the Dallas Cowboys at the end of half. And if everybody's deep, you know, which is typical in these kind of Hail Mary desperation situations, everybody's deep. Well, you would end up just throwing a little dump pass to Tyreek Hill again. And the other receivers all go down and block. And essentially it's a kick return. Mm. And Tyreek runs as far as he can and gets down, and they take a timeout. And then they come up for their second play, and they have all the receivers up top to the right, and they have Kelce down below. And he's kind of in that funny split where he's about a couple yards from the tackle. And if you listen to the tape closely, Patrick runs through a little fake dummy cadence, you know, just to kind of see what the defense is doing. And he walks up and you can hear him talk to Kelce. And he says, do it, Kelce, do it. And this happened all the time in this offense, that when Kelsey's isolated like this one-on-one, based off the look you're getting from the defense, you can just kind of tell him routes and there's code names for him. Well, he clearly walks up and tells Kelce what he wants. And then again, just like we talked about with Josh Allen, when he threw the touchdown to Gabriel Davis, Patrick kind of holds the defenders in the middle of the field, and Kelce runs this little kind of out and up seam route on the corner, and they hit him, and he knifes for like a 25-yard pass and gets down, and they call timeout. And you're thinking, you know, at this point, we're talking like desperation. Like, are they going to kick a 62-yard field goal? Can Butker make it? Are they going to have to throw a Hail Mary? I mean, it ends up being, you know, a 40-something-yard field goal, and then 13 seconds.
49-yard field goal for Harrison Butker.
I'm sitting next to my son, and he obviously has some Kansas City bias, and he's saying the game's not over. The game's not over. They're just going to run that play. They're going to run that play to Tyreek, you know, and he's going to get down to the 40. They're going to call timeout. And I'm like, bud, it's not happening. Like, it's over. The Bills won. I'm like, you're delusional.
One day you'll learn, my son, how the real world works.
I'm like, buddy, you're talking crazy talk. Like, that's not going to happen. And they hit these two plays. And when Butker hit this field goal, you should have seen my son dancing around the living room. And I think it was, I mean, obviously he was pumped that Chiefs won. I think he was more pumped just to rub it in my face that he had proved me wrong. It was just bananas. I literally, it's unexplainable. For everybody. Like, it was absolutely unexplainable what he did. I it's crazy.
It's pandemonium. And at this point, like, I feel like the country, the entirety of it feels like it's watching this game. We're all concentrated on this overtime now. The overtime, it feels what it wound up being, and we don't have to go blow by blow through it, because it wound up being both a tremendous, you know, culmination for the Chiefs and this bizarre, like, almost numbing anti-climax. Because, of course, there's a coin flip. The Bills get to call it, they called tails, it's heads, and the Chiefs methodically and surgically and truly, like, comprehensively taking advantage of how gassed the Bills' defense was, Alex. Yep. They go down 67 yards in 7 plays. And as you're watching this drive unfold, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I think once overtime started and everybody caught their breath and their heart rate came down, you know, from what we just had seen at the end of regulation, I think we all were excited to tune in. Like, well, here we're going to get more. I mean, we're getting, you know, bonus. And how amazing is it? And like you said, you know, the coin toss ends up being crucial. Bills don't make the right call. The ball goes to the Chiefs. And yeah, they really, I think there was only the one third down. They end up hitting Kelsey on the third down to move the chains. But after that, it really,
yep.
You could just tell these defenses at this point were so depleted. And it really was a matter of whoever was going to get the ball first in overtime. And then fittingly, Patrick connects with Kelsey on a sweet little back shoulder in the corner for a walk-off win in Arrowhead. And the place is going nuts. And the camera, you know, pans to Josh Allen sitting on the bench. And the reality sets in that this guy's thrown 9 touchdown passes in 2 playoff games. Oof. And he didn't get a chance. And I think you are left with feeling that, like, I know this is the way the rules have always been, but I'm not sure that makes it right. And, you know, and yeah, and unfortunately it did kind of come down to a coin toss in the end. I think the culture they have going is awesome. Bummer to see them, you know, their season come to an end. I think obviously though, they got a big window here. The core of that team, I think, is going to be together here for a while to come.
Yeah, it's weird to feel after watching a game that I personally had no rooting interest in. I feel like I've just been broken up with. You just said a phrase like, just be thankful that it happened. Don't cry that it's over. Be thankful that it happened. I feel that way. Yeah. I feel that way. And it's crazy to say that because the game that preceded it, Alex, felt like it could have led any normal day of football talk, because what we had in Tampa Bay with the Rams visiting them, with Tom Brady doing Tom Brady things, like, all right, so for this one, just to reset us all emotionally and factually, right, the Rams were up 27-3 midway through the third quarter. It looked like a blowout. Tampa Bay looked like they were melting down. Tom Brady had his lip bloodied. He had his first taunting penalty after getting hit by Von Miller. Like, this was a frustrated team, a team that looked like it was in the grave as well. And then what did you see happen?
Yeah, 27-3. And at this point, Tampa Bay hadn't done anything on offense. I mean, I don't even think they'd gotten in the red zone yet. I mean, they'd had a couple long attempts at field goals. They hit one of them to get their 3 points. You know, Cam Akers, right before the end of half, fumbles on the 1 yard line going into score. Otherwise, this game, it might have been 34-3. And, you know, the Rams tried to give this game away here at the end of third and fourth quarter and proceeded 3 straight fumbles going forward. Cooper Kupp, who obviously is amazing, he ends up uncharacteristically fumbling, leads to points. They have a botched snap fumble with Matthew Stafford in the center, who ends up firing a shotgun snap over his head, ends up getting recovered by the Bucks, leads the points. And then Cam Akers, when the game's basically over and the Rams are in 4-minute offense at this point, you know, they're up at 7 and trying to run out the clock, and a first down ends the game, and they're running Cam Akers up the middle, and Ndamukong Suh forces a fumble.
They'll feed Akers again. He's going to hit the hole. He is fumbled. Fumble the football. It's fumbled. It's recovered by the Bucs. Tampa Bay's got the football at the 30-yard line.
And all of a sudden, the Bucs, who hadn't done anything to really deserve being in this game, you know, other than a prayer they threw up. I mean, he threw a deep ball up to Mike Evans, who was one-on-one with Jalen Ramsey, and he made a great play on the ball, and it was a great throw by Tom. But other than that, they couldn't really do anything. Mm-hmm. The Rams' D-line absolutely dominated this game. Aaron Donald, Von Miller, Leonard Floyd. I mean,
terrorizing.
They made Tom finally look human. But all of a sudden, with these fumbles, opened the door wide open. And then we got to a fourth and one in the red zone, and Leonard Fournette runs it in for a touchdown. And all of a sudden, it's tied up, and you're thinking, I mean, wait a second. It was just 27-3. The Bucs didn't have a chance in this, and all of a sudden, we're tied, and it looks like we're going to overtime.
And it looks like we're going to get, you know, the sequel to the Atlanta Falcons 28-3 choke job.
Exactly.
Super Bowl 51 being replayed here in the divisional round in Tampa Bay. But instead, to go back to the Cooper Kupp aspect of this, Alex, I want you to break down exactly how this unfolded here, because Cooper Kupp, of course, the receiving Triple Crown winner this season, right? The most dangerous weapon on the Rams offense. He gets open for a pair of catches, 20 yards and 44 yards, to save the entire season for the Rams. What did you see on those plays that made them look, at least to the casual viewer, so damn easy?
Yeah, back-to-back plays that won his team the game. And the first one came on the second play of their drive. They get the ball. Obviously, they're trying to go down and get a field goal. Kupp's lined up in the slot. And this is really one of the unique things about Cooper Kupp, is that he can play outside the numbers as well as inside. And there aren't a ton of receivers that do that consistently. Cooper Kupp's one of these rare guys that does a little bit of everything, and they do it all with him. They move him around. And that, I think, that's one of the things that makes him really hard to take away. So here he is. He's in the slot and he's manned up, and he runs this little deep out cut. And he has a great little outside release. And again, just like I talked about when Tyreek Hill ran his great little in-cut versus man, he runs this nice little stutter step where he kind of head fakes in and breaks back out and loses his corner bad. I mean, and he's wide open. He catches this ball, this out ball on the boundary, and it's 20-yard gain. And you're like, oh, gosh, here, you know, potentially they got a chance to maybe get a big, you know, big field goal opportunity to try to win this game. And the very next play, Todd Bowles, who is lives and dies with being aggressive, brings the house, and Matthew Stafford drops back and buys time and drifts back. And again, Cooper Kupp's in the slot. And this time, because they ran, you know, a zero blitz, he's manned up with a safety. So it's Antoine Winfield Jr. is manned up on Cooper Kupp, and Cooper Kupp gets a free rush at him and hits this post route. And Matthew Stafford does an amazing time, like I said, buying a little bit of time. And he puts this deep ball up to Cooper Kupp.
Deep down the right side. He's got Kupp running down the hash marks. He reels it in at the 15. Cooper Kupp has the catch, tackled at the 12.
And it seemed like this ball was in the air for a long time, just watching it live.
You're smiling ear to ear describing this play, Alex. What about this tickles you so much?
This is something that you rep a lot as a quarterback and receivers, and there's a lot of communication, nonverbal communication, that everybody has to see the same thing, right? Cooper Kupp knows that it's cover zero. Matthew Stafford knows that it's cover zero. He's told the O-line where to go so that he knows where the free rusher is. He's going to then drift away from the free rusher to buy an extra half a tick of time so that he can then throw this ball up as high as he can, and he hits it. They hit it. And again, everything this entire offseason, the talk of obviously the bold move to go get Matthew Stafford, the ups and downs that they've had this year. You know, Stafford has played absolutely phenomenal at times. And then he also led the league in pick sixes. Last week they won. It was his first playoff win, but he only threw the ball 17 times. Really, they ran the ball, won with defense. But this is why they got him. This is why they made that trade. Mm-hmm. I mean, he threw the ball 38 times today. He threw it for 366 yards, and it was for the moment of these last two plays to make these two huge big time throws. And it was great to see him do it against the greatest of all time at the Bucs, and to go look like they'd given this away and to go steal it back before time expired was really phenomenal. Cause in the end, they were the better team. They were the better football team. You take away some of these fumbles and it wasn't even close. And I think it's they deserved it, and it's looking like it's going to be an amazing rivalry rematch in the NFC Championship game.
All right, Alex, after the break, we'll talk about the other half of that rivalry in that NFC title game with the Niners at the Packers, which, by the way, also happened this weekend, in a second here.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Alex, there is so much left to discuss here. All of it is incredible because, I mean, look, the internet at one point exploded with just Aaron Rodgers jokes that happened. You're on Twitter, yep. But I assume it filtered through to you at some point. But I want to just talk about the beginning of this game and then ask, like, the question of what the hell happened after for the Packers offense? Because at the beginning of the game, the Packers are marching down the field. They're on like a 6 minute almost opening drive. It looks real easy. It looks like it's going to be a real long day for your other former team, the San Francisco 49ers. But that wound up being ultimately the only touchdown that the Packers scored.
Hand off to Dillon, and he will power all the way into the end zone for a Packer touchdown. He ran right behind the bunch.
What happened after that first drive? Was it an adjustment by the defense of San Francisco? What did you see?
Yeah, I mean, I was with you that first drive. It was a little bit as a Niner fan and alumni, it was a little bit like, you know, oh no, they marched down the field. They didn't have a single third down. It was a 10 play drive, a mix of run and pass. They hit Davante Adams like three times for 35 yards. They're dumping balls off to Aaron Jones. He's taking off. I mean, running the ball, AJ Dillon in the red zone hammers it in for the touchdown. And it was methodical. I think for all of us watching, we knew to have any chance for the Niners to have any chance, excuse me. they were going to have to play great on defense. I got no bias, Pablo. I got
yeah,
none.
I can tell.
And,
yeah.
And they were going to have to play great on defense. And certainly that first drive didn't look like they were prepared for it. And I don't know what adjustments they made necessarily from an X's and O standpoint. I think the biggest thing was finally being able to get to some third downs. And then I think also shutting down the run, I think was a big thing. But the biggest difference maker in this game was the defensive line defensively. I think D'Amico Ryans deserves a ton of credit again.
I mean, the job he's done as a relatively young coordinator, yeah, yeah. Right? Running that
yeah.
defense.
Yeah. First year coordinator. He's still a young guy. I mean, I played against him and here he is as a D coordinator.
That's right.
And then to end up holding after that opening drive, obviously for the rest of the game, they hold him to 3 points. Aaron Rodgers didn't even have a touchdown. And a lot of credit goes to this D-line. Nick Bosa, Eric Armstead were awesome. I think they each had a couple sacks. But Aaron Rodgers even said it after the game that they did such a great job of moving him off the spot. And a little bit of it, you know, when you think about Aaron Rodgers at his best, I mean, this is a guy that is not afraid to hold the football back there. I mean, and dance around mm-hmm. and run around and hold it some more. And he makes so many plays creatively, you know, like buying time and moving around and with his feet. And he wasn't able to do that. He never got comfortable. And then in some big moments, it finally paid off. You know, like we talked about a few weeks ago, these residual hits on quarterbacks have an effect.
Yes,
and,
the hit
yeah,
meter.
You speed their time, you know, their time clock up. You speed their feet up, their decision making. And it's usually a good result for the defense. And I think it definitely paid off. And Aaron's a guy that it's so hard to do that to.
And there was one play in specific I want to break down with you here, Alex, because yep. it's the Packers' final drive. Okay. The game is tied 10-10. It's 3rd and 11. And there is 3:30 left on the clock. And Aaron Rodgers, who's been under pressure all game, as you just said, he ends up throwing deep and incomplete to Davante Adams.
3rd down and 11. Here's the play. Force a punt here. 5 for 11 on 3rd down, Green Bay. Where's Davante Adams now? He's wide right. Aaron Rodgers back. A blitz, a deep shot down the field in a double coverage. They jump forward, incomplete.
And meanwhile, in the postmortem, there is seemingly Alan Lazard just breaking across the middle, 15 yards downfield, for what would have been, hypothetically, an easy first down, maybe more. What did that play in retrospect, to be fair, what did it look like to you?
Well, you just said it. I mean, 3:30, you're thinking that there's way too much time on the clock, right? For Aaron Rodgers, the MVP, the Packers, they're at home. They're definitely, it's tied, but you know, too much time. They're going to march it down the field and probably win this game. And I remember thinking this, that when he took the shot deep, obviously on 3rd and 11, you know, and they're in their own territory, so it's not necessarily 4-down territory. But he heaves this ball deep, and you're thinking he must have seen something, because obviously the further you throw the ball downfield, the less opportunity of completing it, even on air. And it's just pure statistics. And so he chucks this ball deep, and you're thinking, well, God, he's got to have a great opportunity in order to have taken a risk like that, because this was the last time they touched the football. And the camera then pans to him, and there's two defenders down there. And he's in double coverage, and there wasn't really even a prayer for a completion. And it was kind of a head-scratching moment, because we really don't see this from Aaron very often. And then, yeah, they pulled back the wide view 22, and you see, I think it's Alan Lazard, yeah, running over the middle, wide open. Again, for me at that point, it was clear, going back to this, just the effect the defensive line had. Aaron had been hit all day. He had never felt comfortable back there. And when you do get hurried, quarterbacks do funny things, and even MVP Hall of Famers.
It seemed like part of the funny thing here was that he reverted to maybe the only person he seemed to trust in his receiving core, which is Devontae Adams. I mean, Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones, for the record here, combined for 21 targets of Rodgers' 29 pass attempts. No other Packer got over 2 targets. And I just wonder, when you're under duress, under center, if trying to find your human binky, Devontae Adams is kind of what happened on that play too.
Yeah. The funny thing is, going back to when these guys played in the regular season, you know, Aaron kind of went back to that same mode, and it's what won the game. You know, I mean, remember the Niners had scored and took the lead, and it looked like odds. And, you know, Aaron basically just dropped back and tried to find Devontae Adams and ended up, you know, obviously it worked out for him. You know, I think in this case that the Niners were certainly prepared for that, you know, doubling over the top of Devontae. And again, yeah, I do think that. I mean, he's one of the best receivers in the game. These two obviously have an amazing connection. But clearly in a big moment, you know, I think it's got to be more than that. It can't just be always throw it up to a guy or find a guy. Like, if they're going to double him, there's got to be other guys in your system, in your offense, in huddle that can go make a play.
Yeah. It's just very jarring to watch the emergence of the Archangel Gabriel Davis out of nowhere and then wonder, wait a minute, Rodgers couldn't find someone else outside of Devontae Adams on his team. But okay, so I want to turn to the 49ers side of things, to your side of things, you unbiased commentator, Alex. because let's go with Jimmy Garoppolo here, right? Because there were a number of balls that could have been picked off but were not. Also, for fairness' sake, he was dealing with his thumb injury that he's been dealing with for weeks and weeks now, and a shoulder injury. And otherwise, like, you know, he came away having steered his team to another victory. So how did his report card get graded by Professor Alex Smith?
You know, I don't think it helped. I, you know, Troy Aikman wasn't giving him a ton of love on the telecast.
He did not enjoy the Jimmy G experience.
No, and there were certainly a couple throws out into the flat that were pretty hairy, made you hold your breath, and that I think he got lucky on. But there were also some really unlucky plays. I mean, he hit George Kittle in the chest in the first half of this game, and Kittle, it would have been a 60-yard touchdown, and somehow George Kittle didn't catch it.
Garoppolo looks left, now middle, throws, caught! George Kittle dropped the ball! He had the ball and dropped it!
Oh, what a shame.
He turned back to catch the ball, and he dropped it on a seam route.
Later, he hit Juwan Jennings for what would have been another big gain and third down conversion, and he dropped the ball. So there were times when he wasn't getting a lot of help. I also say this, his right tackle couldn't block Rashawn Gary to save his life. And
that's correct.
And he was completely
well.
Under duress most of the game. And then again, he made some huge throws down the stretch. Later in that final drive, when he hits Kittle I think that was a 3rd and 12 or 11, he hits Kittle over the middle and stands in there and delivers a ball. It was, I think, zero or below freeze or below zero with the wind chill. This is a guy that's got a thumb on his throwing hand. The ball couldn't have been easy to grip. He didn't have great protection all game. And so it wasn't going to be pretty. It wasn't going to be pretty. He's playing a really good defensive unit. Yeah, there were certainly some throws like that were questionable. The interception I didn't love. I didn't love all the way around at the end of half. He throws an interception. He scrambles out to his right. He's got George Kittle open. Kittle's got his hand up. The old "I'm wide open," you know, signal, and so you throw it to him. He's, you know, one of the best players on their team. And Kittle doesn't really come back to the ball. The DB ends up stepping in front, picks it. And so, like, there were some plays that weren't great, but I do think he hung tough in there. And then late, he made some plays in that final drive that ended up leading to the game-winning field goal. And to go win at Lambeau against the number one seed, they were the best team in football this year. They had the MVP. They have a huge home field advantage. And for a team from California to go play in you know, ridiculously cold weather at Lambeau and find a way to win the game. Obviously, special teams, we haven't even mentioned, played a huge part in this game. But yeah, I thought Jimmy did some great things, and they don't show up on the stat sheet. It was not going to be an awesome game, but like, I don't think he got a ton of help either, is my point.
Well, Alex, let's you mentioned the special teams, and I feel bad already, like, delaying our conversation about them.
Yeah.
And look, we could have spent a lot more time talking about Deebo Samuel, that 3rd-and-7 run that they called to, you know, pick up the first down, keep the game.
It was amazing.
Dude, I mean, like, there's a whole, we will do, I think, a whole Deebo Samuel tribute at a date to come. But the special teams here, that's the real story of this game, right? Because
it is.
I mean, the Packers had this field goal get blocked to end the first half. They allowed a big kickoff run by, Deebo Samuel to start the second, which set up the whole first score by the 49ers of the game, which, by the way, like, also came along with this blocked punt. So, like, in the end, what do special teams failures and glories like these, what do they come down to? How do you process this as a quarterback in terms of just like who gets assigned blame here or otherwise?
Yeah, you know, typically, I mean, every game special teams have a huge impact on the game, and we never talk about it. It's a lot of times it's not sexy other than big returns or big blocks and field position battles. You know, a team that has a great net punt coverage unit, we don't want to talk about that, but that has huge bearings on a season and on games, especially a cold weather game when it's low scoring. You said it, Deebo Samuel, they throw him back there on kickoff return. I mean, he's making huge returns, doing anything he can to get his hands on the ball. They blocked the kick before half, and I thought that was really big because they didn't go down 2 scores.
Hunter Bradley, Corey Bohorquez, the punter,
blocked.
And they blocked the field goal attempt at the gun, and the 49ers get off the field with no points scored by Green Bay. What a wild ending of this half.
They had this huge momentum shift. This was right after Jimmy had thrown the interception, and they blocked this field goal. And also on the flip side of this, special teams in Green Bay have been a bit of a disaster all year.
Yes.
I mean, they have had field goal problems all year. Obviously, they have Mason Crosby, but they've had snap
holder
problems.
One of the worst in the league in terms of all the rankings.
Yep. They've been bad. And they blocked this kick, and it kind of seems like, as crazy as it is to go running in 7-0 at Lambeau, they're pretty energized, you know, by this block kick. And then in the fourth quarter to get this block punt that obviously then results in a touchdown.
Last week in Dallas, they blocked the punt. They blocked the punt of Bjork as it's rolling free.
Pick
on
it up.
The goal line of 49ers, swoop it, and Talanoa Hufanga scored. Touchdown!
To see 2 block kicks in a divisional playoff game is crazy. It's a 10-point swing, and it ended up being the difference. I think it was a great example of how important it is, right? I mean, these are huge plays, incredibly exciting, you know, hats off to the Niners and their special teams unit for getting it done and making these plays being a huge spark, obviously the winning spark for the game.
Yeah, and by the way, the Packers, as the last note here on this game, had only 10 men on the field for that game-winning field goal, which is, again, more evidence that the Packers need to fix that problem, among many other issues, obviously Aaron Rodgers related, that they'll have in the offseason. But okay, we're in Tennessee now, Alex. It's somehow the beginning of the weekend. We had no idea it would play out like it would. But what Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals did to the Titans, the top-seeded Titans in the AFC, I mean, you're a guy who has taken his fair share of sacks in his life.
Yeah, of course.
I feel like that's safe to say. Yep. That's been established on ESPN Daily. Yeah. Okay. Joe Burrow was sacked 9 times, Alex, and still completed 75% of his passes for over 300 yards. What did that specific accomplishment tell you? How absurd is that?
There's a lot there with Joe. It's crazy. I mean, again, to go to this, like, the Titans were finally healthy, and I think they were a team that nobody was talking about. I think they're a team that their whole D-line's back healthy, their whole offensive line's back healthy. This is how this team's built. I mean, we've seen them multiple times against elite teams in the NFL, this D-line just wreck havoc. They've had some huge moments this year, and they did it again. I mean, Jeffrey Simmons was unblockable. Harold Landry, Danico Autry, like nine sacks. And here you are, you've got a second-year quarterback. And we've talked a lot about, you know, Joe's demeanor on the field, especially in the pocket. And he really is kind of unflappable back there. He kind of has this, for me, he makes me think of Joe Montana. Mm. In kind of the pocket. And it's a little bit of the Brady thing too. Like, just very cool and collected in there, and they don't get rattled. And this is a guy that took a ton of hits last year. I mean, he got beat up his rookie season. And this game looked like that. They couldn't run the football. They're throwing it. Their only chance is to throw it every down. Obviously, they got a bunch of playmakers at the skill positions. And he's taking his lumps. I mean, he doesn't have a prayer. I mean, on a lot of these situations,
but he
doesn't.
It looks cruel. What's happening to Joe Burrow?
Yep.
Yeah.
But he holds on to the football in the pocket. He doesn't. There's no fumbles, and he hangs on, and he gives his team a chance. And it wasn't pretty. I think to see him, we've seen him now play in crazy shootouts with some of the best, and he looked beyond his years. And then I think here these last few weeks to kind of see him. See the bigger picture. I mean, this was a game that Evan McPherson kicked 4 field goals, and you know they had a rushing touchdown, and that was the game. That was that kind of game. They hit. You know, the Bengals defense was playing tough. Titans offense couldn't get rolling, and you saw, I think Joe Burrow. You know, he had such a great grasp on the way this game was going. This is crazy. I mean, he just doesn't seem like they. 2 years ago, they drafted him with the number 1 overall pick, and they were an absolute disaster of an organization, right? And here they are 2 years later winning a divisional round game. I think he's the first number 1 pick to do that in a 2-year span ever. For me, it just goes back to his demeanor. Here's a guy that, like, 9 sacks. I mean, talk about getting hit. That's not even counting the hurries and, you
right,
know, like
pressures.
And he just never, it never got to him. And then they get the big, you know, they get the big interception late in the game. And you know, he gets them in field goal position for the walk-off win. And he just doesn't look like a second-year player, not even close.
No.
And he's got his team believing. I think he's got his entire city believing. And I think the rest of the NFL, like, are wondering. I mean, people kind of kept holding their breath. And are they for real? Can they really do it? And I think the answer is clearly yes. And obviously has a ton to do with Joe. And you know, I think, like you said, all these intangibles that he has.
Yeah, and the reward, by the way, for making your first AFC title game since 1988 is, yes, getting to run away from the Chiefs defensive line, right? I mean, Melvin Ingram suddenly is going to be a figure who figures prominently into the nightmares of one Joe Burrow as we move on. But Alex, we do have to move on. And after the break, I'm going to make sure I hold your feet to the fire and get a couple picks looking ahead to next weekend.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Alex Smith, it is certainly, by all rational standards, far too early to, like, you know, make some Blood Brothers style commitments to some picks. But that's what we're going to do here today. Yeah. So we're going to start with the AFC. It is going to be the Chiefs against the aforementioned Bengals. Who's going to the Super Bowl?
I mean, no offense to all the Bengals fans out there, but I think this is the easiest, the easier of the games to pick. I think the Bengals are extremely talented. They just beat the Chiefs not too many weeks ago in Cincinnati. But I think it'll be different this time around. This is, I mean, obviously the Chiefs have been here before. This is new territory for the Bengals. Walking into Arrowhead, you know, well into January here is a whole nother animal. And I think the Chiefs are going to be too much. I think they'll have a better plan for the Bengals offense, especially, like I said, off the game they played at the end of the season. So I really do think this is going to be too much, Patrick. And I think they're rolling on offense right now. I think it's going to be hard for the Bengals to keep up. On the other side.
Yeah. Okay. So hold on. Yeah. We have one half of the Alex Smith Bowl already in the Super Bowl, right? We have your Chiefs in it. Rams Niners. You went and saw this game in person a couple weeks ago. We talked about it when you got off the plane. How does this one go?
I think this one's so hard. I mean, I think Jimmy's like 6-0 versus the Rams. Kyle has had Sean McVay's number. But all these games have been tight. Both of them this year, you know, the one went to overtime.
Yes.
And I think it's going to be amazing. I think this is going to be absolutely amazing game. It's at SoFi. We're going to get a little preview of the Super Bowl venue in the NFC Championship game. I think it's going to be hard to beat them again. I think it's going to be hard for the Niners to beat the Rams again. I think the Rams are rolling. I think they've found another gear again. Watching them today, take those fumbles out of this game, and it wasn't even close. They were absolutely dominant. Aaron Donald is playing at a level it's
ridiculous.
And then to know that he's joined by the likes of Von Miller and Leonard Floyd up front, like I think it's going to be too much. But I think this is going to be an absolutely bananas game. I can't wait to watch it. I love this rivalry. I grew up in San Diego. I live in Northern California now. Obviously, I played a long time for the Niners. I think this rivalry is amazing. I think this is going to be a fun game. But I mean, obviously, I have some biases in this, but I just think
your head is in your hands.
I just think the Rams are
going to
be too much.
I
just think the Rams are going to be too much, Pablo. As much as I want to pick the Niners, and obviously I'll be rooting for them, I just think the Rams got it going right now. I think they're going to do it.
You have proven to be unbiased in ways that are shocking to me, Alex. So you know what? You say Rams, Chiefs. I'm going to say we're going to get the Alex Smith Bowl, and we'll find out who's right when you return a week from today. So, Smith, I'm still tingling. I assume you still are, so let's try and get some sleep until then.
That's right. Thanks, as always, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.